Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, October 28th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, power outage in Redway and Garberville area affect 1,835 customers. Missing juveniles located in Arcata Community Forest. Dia de los Muertos Festival of Altars event in Eureka canceled over ice concerns. And Arcata's Union Street Charter School named 2025 California Blue Ribbon School. Stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
At approximately 2:47 p.m., an unplanned outage in Redway, Garberville area left 1,835 customers without power, including the station for KMUD News. Nat Cardos reports.
At approximately 2:47 today, a power outage was reported near Redway and Garberville that affected 1,835 customers. According to the outage map on the PG&E website and confirmed by a spokesperson, the outage was unplanned and the estimated time for restoration will be at approximately 8:30 p.m., if not sooner. KMUD News spoke with Tamar Sarkeesian, a spokesperson for PG&E, for more information on the incident.
At 2:47, an outage started impacting 1,835 customers at the peak. We were able to restore the majority of the impacted customers an hour later. That was over 1,000 customers that were restored. At this time, 830 customers are impacted by the outage. The outage was caused by a tree branch, and PG&E is currently on site working to make repairs and restore power safely and as quickly as possible. We expect the remaining customers to be restored early this evening or even late this afternoon.
Once again, the estimated time of restoration will be approximately 8:30 p.m., if not sooner. KMUD News will continue to provide up-to-date information on incidents and outages like this one in the future. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.
At approximately 2:47 p.m. today, an unplanned outage in Redway, Garberville area left 1,835 customers without power, including the station for KMUD News. Nat Cardos reports.
At approximately 2:47 today, a power outage was reported near Redway and Garberville that affected 1,835 customers. According to the outage map on the PG&E website and confirmed by a spokesperson, the outage was unplanned and the estimated time for restoration will be at approximately 8:30 p.m., if not sooner. KMUD News spoke with Tamar Sarkeesian, a spokesperson for PG&E, for more information on the incident.
At 2:47, an outage started impacting 1,835 customers at the peak. We were able to restore the majority of the impacted customers an hour later. That was over 1,000 customers that were restored. At this time, 830 customers are impacted by the outage. The outage was caused by a tree branch, and PG&E is currently on site working to make repairs and restore power safely and as quickly as possible. We expect the remaining customers to be restored early this evening or even late this afternoon.
Once again, the estimated time of restoration will be approximately 8:30 p.m., if not sooner. KMUD News will continue to provide up-to-date information on incidents and outages like this one in the future. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.
On October 26th, search and rescue operation conducted by the Arcata Police Department helped locate two juvenile hikers that had briefly gone missing while hiking in the Arcata Community Forest. Nat Cardos reports.
On October 26th, at approximately 8:33 p.m., the Arcata Police Department received a report of a missing 13-year-old boy and a 17-year-old girl who had gone hiking in the Arcata Community Forest on the Ridge Trail off of West End Road. The siblings were originally scheduled to be back home before dark, and their parents' attempts to contact them via cell phone were unsuccessful. Officers with the department immediately began the search for the juveniles, and at approximately 9:20 p.m., mutual aid was requested from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office search and rescue team due to concern over plummeting temperatures. KMUD News spoke with Lieutenant Keith Altizer, patrol lieutenant for the Arcata Police Department, for more information on the incident.
So the search went all throughout the night. So we were first notified at 8:33 p.m., and our officers immediately started searching. And then at about 9:20 p.m., we requested mutual aid from Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, who has the county search and rescue team, just due to the cold weather that night.
APD also received assistance from the Arcata Fire District, U.S. Coast Guard, California Office of Emergency Services, CHP Northern Air Operations, and Cal Poly Humboldt Police Department in the search. Air operations aided in the search through the use of a FLIR system, which is a kind of thermal imaging camera that detects heat signatures and can provide an eye in the sky in search and rescue efforts.
So they have a helicopter stationed over in Redding that has a FLIR system that, you know, can help locate basically the heat that's given off by a body. We had the Coast Guard flying over, but they don't have the FLIR system, so they were doing more of a spotlight search.
At approximately 10:42 p.m., the brother was located by a rescue team along the trail and transported out of the area and reunited with his parents. The search continued through the night until about 7:51 a.m., when the sister was located also along the ridge trail. She was transported out of the Arcata Community Forest by the Arcata Fire District and transferred to an ambulance for medical care due to cold weather exposure. Neither sustained any injuries. It is important to remember to stay on the trails if you are unfamiliar with areas that you are hiking in, and to make sure that your devices are fully charged before leaving for a hike. Here's Altizer with more advice for hikers going out.
Absolutely. You know, pack for the weather in case something happens. You know, having a sweatshirt or a coat. You know, always tell somebody what your path is and the time you expect to be home. And, you know, if you can, you know, have a fully charged cell phone with you so that you can reach out or some other means of communication. They also have, for hikers, you know, GPS-type indicators that if you have an emergency that you can activate so somebody will be able to find your location.
Reporting for KMUD, this is Nat Cardos.
In a previous story aired for KMUD News, the Dia de los Muertos Festival of Altars announced that the event would be held November 2nd. As of October 26th, the event has been canceled over concerns of ICE. Nat Cardos reports.
Last week, KMUD News covered a story about how Somos Medicina would be hosting a Dia de los Muertos festival in downtown Eureka on November 2nd, which would celebrate the holiday as well as friends and family that have passed on. On Monday, October 27th, KMUD received an email from organizers that read the following, quote, "To our humble community, with a heavy heart, we have decided to cancel our Day of the Dead Festival of Altars celebration this year. In short, we feel that we cannot bring people together safely at this time when we are being targeted and kidnapped. We thank you for understanding and wish you a beautiful celebration con sus muertitos at your altars in your homes." End quote. KMUD News reached out to organizers for further statement on the cancellation of the event, though did not hear anything back before news time. The cancellation comes as U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, raids in U.S. cities nationwide are reportedly becoming more aggressive. For example, according to a Department of Homeland Security report from late August, more than 5,000 immigrants have been arrested in the Los Angeles area alone due to these ICE raids. Centro de Pueblo, a community nonprofit based in Eureka, has a hotline that community members can call to report and verify ICE activity in Humboldt County. The number for this hotline is 707-200-8091. This is Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD News.
On October 23, 2025, State Superintendent of Public Instructions Tony Thurmond made the announcement that the Union Street Charter School in Arcata, California, earned the distinction of a 2025 California Blue Ribbon School. According to the California Department of Education, the National Blue Ribbon School program looks for schools from elementary through high school that have overall academic excellence or show progress in closing achievements among student subgroups. Ray Erickson, the principal director at Union Street Charter, was honored to win the award and thanked the faculty, staff, and students for this prestigious award.
It's an honor that few schools receive. There were only 30 in the state, so I think it sets us apart as far as the educational program that we provide to students. And I think it's a great honor for all of our students and their families, and a recognition of the staff that puts in a lot of work and is very dedicated to this school.
This is the first time Union Street Charter has been nominated for this award, and only the fifth school in Humboldt County to ever receive the award.
Last fall, actually, fall, winter, we were nominated by the California Department of Education for high achievement on standardized testing, but most importantly, for subgroups achieving high growth in their test scores. We have a group of socioeconomically disadvantaged, and they did very well. They improved from the previous year. So that was one of the main reasons we were nominated. Then that application went to the U.S. Department of Education, and we wrote a rigorous 12, 15 pages documenting our curriculum and everything we do at the school. And then we were given the award by the state of California.
With small class sizes and a focus on the arts, Union Street Charter School gives teachers a place to design and administer their curriculum in a unique and positive way.
Our teachers design curriculum that is something that they are passionate about. Like our new fifth grade teacher spent years teaching in Japan, so she's going to do a unit about Japan. Our fourth grade teacher does a lot of science, engineering, and technology projects with his students, etc. Third grade, that teacher is passionate about Native American studies. And so the students become really engaged in the curriculum, and because the teachers are so interested in it themselves, they make it very exciting and interesting and hands-on.
For more information about the National Blue Ribbon Schools program, visit the California Department of Education's website, www.cde.gov/ta/sr/br/index.asp. And for more information about Union Street Charter Schools, visit their website, unionstreetcharter.org, or call their number 707-822-4845. In state news, medical dental vision benefits underused, Public News Service Suzanne Potter reports.
1 in 5 people on Medi-Cal health insurance don't use their dental benefits, so the California Department of Health Care Services is spreading the word. The state reinstated full dental for adults on Medi-Cal in 2018 after cutting it in 2009, so some people may not even know they have coverage. Dana Durham runs the dental program at the California Department of Health Care Services.
Full-scope Medi-Cal dental services includes checkups, cleanings and x-rays, filling root canals and crown, dentures, braces for qualifying children, and emergency care.
More than 15 million Californians depend on Medi-Cal, including 3 in 7 children in the state, but fewer than half of kids actually see a dentist. Families can find a participating dentist on the website smilecalifornia.org. Due to budget cuts, undocumented adults who qualify for Medi-Cal will lose Medi-Cal dental benefits except for emergency services starting in July of next year. Donnie Hsu, Vision Program Chief with the California Department of Health Care Services, notes that Medi-Cal started offering full vision coverage in 2022, which includes a routine eye exam and eyeglasses every 24 months.
Medi-Cal is addressing these key social drivers of health. The ability to see clearly is impactful for low-income adults, seniors, and people with disability who may otherwise go without their vision care.
Vision benefits also cover tests and treatment for glaucoma and macular degeneration, even artificial eyes for people who lose an eye. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Students at 50 California high schools hold walkout urging lawmakers to pass Polluters Pay Climate Superfund Act. KPFA's Brooke Helena Kirchner reports.
Dozens of Oakland students gathered outside of Assemblymember Buffy Wick's office, urging her to vote yes on Assembly Bill 1243. This bill would establish the Polluters Pay Climate Superfund program. If the bill passes, California's EPA would be required to identify and publish a list of fossil fuel companies that did business with the state between 1990 and 2024 and are determined to be responsible for more than 1 billion metric tons of fossil fuel emissions during that period. These top polluters would be required to pay their share of the total damage amount to the state. That money would go into a superfund used to restore climate damages. Anushka Kalyan of the California Youth Environmental Justice Coalition says this bill places responsibility for the climate crisis where it belongs.
This bill really flips the narrative on who has to pay for climate damages. Historically, it's been California taxpayers, and that's really unfair because we didn't even make the problem in the first place. So why should we be the ones to find a solution? But instead, it forces those who actually made the problem to clean up that mess.
An analysis by the nonprofit climate organization Undaunted K-12 found that students in California in this year alone have already missed 54,000 hours of school time due to climate-related disasters. The Los Angeles Unified School District, the most populous school district in the state, has had to allocate $2.2 billion for repairs after the Palisades fire. Food and Water Watch says that the Climate Superfund could raise over $150 billion from the biggest polluters without raising taxes on families. The Oakland students were joined by groups including Youth vs. Apocalypse, Food and Water Watch, and Frontline Catalysts. Xochitl Cortez is director and co-founder of Frontline Catalysts, an organization that works with youth from communities most impacted by the climate crisis and structural disinvestment. She explained why a walkout was the tactic of choice.
The walkout was a tactic because in Frontline Catalyst, for example, we really center ethnic studies. We understand that historically, student walkouts are very powerful. They send a message to individuals, teachers, communities, that they are willing to sacrifice a day of walkout to say, this is part of our education. We are learning about this. And sometimes this learning happens out in the community.
Haskell Kasai is a college student who performs music under the name Skelly Bo. Following his performance in Frank Ogawa Plaza, he spoke about the collective effervescence of the day's youth-centered action.
It was so beautiful seeing us walking through the streets. Was really cool. But the most thing that I liked, I loved seeing people come out of their work or like look out their window like, what the hell, what is that? What's going on? And seeing like everyday people, workers, like just like looking at us, and they kind of have that look, like it kind of gives you a feel good feeling, because you know, like they feel good, you know what I'm saying? They feel like empowered and like, damn, I can't be out there right now because I have work. So we're doing it for other people, you know what I'm saying, who can't.
May 1st was the deadline for legislation to advance from the committee process. Because AB 1243 failed to meet this deadline, it's likely the bill will have to wait until next year for further action. For KPFA News, I'm Brooke Helena Kirkner.
In national news, food aid set to run out November 1st as federal shutdown continues. Democrats call it cruel and totalitarian. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The federal government shutdown continues with no end in sight, and it's about to get a lot worse for a lot of people. On Saturday, federal funds could start to run out for food aid and Head Start preschool programs. A week later, money runs out for WIC, the food aid program for low-income mothers and young children. WIC serves about 6 million people, but the biggest program threatened is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, also known as food stamps. SNAP serves some 42 million people, about 1 in 8 Americans, and it's never run out of money before, even during shutdowns. But this year could be different, and that's upset many elected leaders.
It is not a privilege to have food. It's a human right to have food.
Democrat Mike Waltz is the governor of Minnesota. He's announced $4 million in emergency funding for SNAP recipients in his state, though the state will not get reimbursed for that after the shutdown ends.
It's our money. It's our money they're holding on to in D.C. It's our money that's at USDA. It's our money that people went through the legislature and appropriated it, and it's being held. And now when we're filling this in, they're not going to reimburse us for you. So just to be very clear, this has gone well beyond financial. This is not fiscal. This is a conscious choice to be cruel.
At the heart of the problem is a partisan legislative stalemate. Republicans want a simple, short-term, stopgap funding bill at current spending levels. Democrats are insisting on funding to extend health care subsidies that are set to expire at the end of the year. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson is dead set against agreeing to that.
If you look at it objectively, you know that it is subsidizing bad policy. We're throwing good money at a bad, broken system, and so it needs real reforms. The reason it was never appropriate or never possible to be resolved on a simple CR, stopgap funding measure, is because it's very complicated to fix. But Republicans have a long list of ideas.
Johnson wants to negotiate those deals after an agreement to reopen government. Until then, he's not open to negotiating the issue with Democrats like Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
And we have a lot of work to do, but it is not a simple thing. And I am not going to go in a back room with Chuck Schumer, like he keeps demanding, with four people and make this decision. I will not do it.
Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut says what's happening with the shutdown is part of what happens in totalitarian states. He spoke on CNN.
I think one of the reasons that President Trump is refusing to negotiate is because he likes the fact that the government is closed, because he thinks he can exercise king-like powers. He can open up the parts of the government that he wants. He can pay the employees who are loyal to him. I mean, this is a leader who is trying to transition our government from a democracy to something much closer to a totalitarian state.
Some Democratic leaders are planning to sue the Trump administration over its decision not to tap a contingency fund to prevent the SNAP cutoff. However that works out, Democrats like Murphy remain unhappy with the way the Trump administration is heading.
I just don't want to live in a world in which Donald Trump and a handful of billionaires decide which part of government works and which don't, which is why I would rather have him at the negotiating table tomorrow so that we can reopen the government and it can be a democratically elected Congress that decides what things get funded, not a handful of super rich dudes.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News, KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. It's been 100 years, but the Vatican is now expected to return Indigenous artifacts to Canada. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, Indigenous communities are preparing for the return of the sacred items.
The museum in the Vatican City has held the artifacts since 1925. But in a few weeks, an announcement is expected that will see the return of dozens of artifacts that could be back in Canada by the end of the year. Indigenous communities have been calling on the Catholic Church for decades to return them. The National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Cindy Woodhouse-Nepenak, has described the artifacts as living, sacred pieces of Indigenous cultures and ceremonies and must be treated as the invaluable objects they are. Cody Grote is an assistant professor of history and Indigenous studies at Western University in Ontario.
To us, these aren't just artifacts that we're going to put behind a glass case. These are ancestors in their own right. They have their own sentience, their own being. So when we repatriate these cultural items, we have to recognize that there's ceremony associated with that. This can't just be a transfer from one box to another to an institution. These are ancestors who need to be welcomed back with ceremony and cultural protocol.
Grote says it's not exactly clear what artifacts are held by the Vatican, but an exhibit at the Vatican in 1925 also published a catalog of specific artifacts. And that's a starting point, he says, to find out what else might be in the collection. Grote also says the artifacts are expected to be transferred to the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops and that the Canadian Museum of History is expected to act as an intermediary. He also says it's important that in all points of the process, First Nations need to be part of the discussions, as he's sure there will be challenges, since the process is expected to be long and slow, but also one that is long overdue. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The play Blue Jays Canoe About Loss, Resilience, and the Power of Native Stories opens next month. Brian Bull, senior reporter for Buffalo's Fire, has this preview.
The story centers around Blue Jay, a DJ at a fictional tribal radio station in Oregon's Willamette Valley.
And good afternoon, and a good day it is indeed.
Kirby Brown plays Blue Jay, who informs and entertains his listeners through the COVID-19 pandemic and the 2020 wildfires. But Blue Jay also struggles.
One of Blue Jay's tragic flaws is that he just doesn't ask for help. When the stuff starts hitting the fan, that's when we gotta hold each other tight.
The big mystery in the play surrounds an incomplete wooden canoe Blue Jay has in storage. The reason why it's been left undone unearths a past tragedy, which has given Blue Jay survivor's guilt. Marta Lou Clifford and Teresa May co-wrote Blue Jay's Canoe. Both have specific lessons they'd like the audience to leave with.
I want them to leave with the importance of stories, the importance of family, and how they are all connected.
Indigenous stories are not artifacts. They're not myths from some time past. They carry knowledge for the present.
The storyline also weaves in traditional teachings and legends, told through a spirit person named Heron, who will eventually be key to solving the show's mystery.
Did you ever hear a story that saved your life?
Blue Jay's Canoe runs through November 23rd at the Very Little Theater in Eugene. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, chair of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, and Vice Chair U.S. Senator Brian Schatz are hosting a hearing Wednesday on the impacts of the federal government shutdown and tribes. Witnesses are leaders from national Native organizations, including in areas of health and education. The hearing in Washington will also be streamed online. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Suzanne Potter, Christopher Martinez, Matt Cardos, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605. Or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Redway Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMud, I'm Gabriel Zucker.